welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday, late morning. Is it safe, finally, to record a podcast and let it live for a few hours before it posts? Is it finally safe? That jinx has just been applied. As we are now into mid-late July, I guess late July is late July, we are starting this week dropping down to once a week until the season ramps back up. Sorry. But that's the way it's going to go. Some people in this podcast have some things on their schedule. I won't say what they are, but, you know, if they want to say, that's fine. Joining us from New York City is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, Brian. Hello, McMahon.
Joining us from Dallas, Texas is Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
So yesterday, Bontemps was part of the story that Adrian Wojnarowski reported about James Harden. Agreeing, you know, formally agreeing to his new contract. Him agreeing to the contract wasn't a surprise. We never thought he was leaving Philly. Him taking a pay cut was not a surprise. We knew that when he opted out of his $47 million player option that he did almost a month ago, a little under a month ago. But Bontemps, go over the dynamics of the contract, and we're going to take a look at what this means for him and the Sixers.
All right, so interesting deal on a couple of fronts. First of all, that James Harden took, as you said, a $14 million pay cut this year from roughly from where he was going to be originally. That is why the Sixers were able to sign his old pals, PJ Tucker and Daniel House, and continue to form Rockets Northeast with Tad Brown and Daryl Morey. On top of that, the fact it's only a one-year deal or with a player option for a second year is also interesting. You know, James Harden certainly is hoping to be better this year than he was last or this coming year than he was last season. We'll see if that's going to be the case. We'll get into that. If he gets back to playing as an MVP caliber guy, he can opt out, presumably get a bunch more money next summer. If things go disastrously badly, presumably he could opt out, maybe go somewhere else. But, you know, to me, this gives them a little bit of flexibility on both sides. And the other thing that's interesting about it is we've sort of been waiting for James Harden to sign this deal in the first place, right? Like, this has basically been agreed to for weeks. So to me, signing it now is an indication that the Sixers are done for business for now, and that they're, you know, any attempts they were going to have to try to rework this roster further are probably not going to happen, because it seemed like they were waiting to do this until they knew they had,
at least on a major scale,
right?
Before the season,
right? There could be something minor, but in terms of, like, you know, significantly reworking the roster, I think to me this is a sign that the Sixers are done with business until the fall, and generally this is what their team is going to look like.
Yeah, and the reason that you're saying that is that, so obviously if you use the full mid-level exception, which is about $10 million, that's what they used to sign PJ Tucker. Once you use that, you enact the hard cap. You can only go a certain amount of money over the tax line, and then you can't spend
roughly $6 million.
Right. So if James Harden had opted into that $47 million contract, or even had signed a new contract that was in the ballpark of the $47 million, the Sixers would not have been able to use that full $10 million non-taxpayer mid-level. They would have been reduced using the $6 million level. And we know that PJ Tucker had a lot of different suitors all offering him that $10 million. And that what ended up getting, I think, in addition to the fact he wanted to come play with James Harden again, I think, you know, he also got, I believe, a player option on the third year, but all 3 years are guaranteed if he wants it. But he had to get that $10 million. So for the Sixers to get into that position, Harden had to drop that salary down. It also opened him up to signing Daniel House to the other exception, the biannual exception. And they made a trade on draft night. You know, Danny Green's salary was not fully guaranteed. They did trade Danny Green to get De'Anthony Melton, but Danny Green would have been, you know, probably waived had he just stayed on the roster. Well, maybe they could have traded him later, but that actually, I would say him taking that pay cut, McMahon, actually enabled the Sixers to add three players. You could make the case that he allowed them to add three players, or at least three players of that quality.
No, I think definitely. When you look at the math, it definitely allowed him to get Melton too.
So the reason he waited, real quick before I go to you, McMahon, the reason that Harden was waiting And he gave an interview to Chris Haynes at Yahoo earlier this week where he essentially said this, where he said, just give me what's left. If the Sixers would have made another trade, if they would have done a trade with Tobias Harris, for example, that reduced their salary further, like let's say they traded Tobias Harris for two players that made $4 million less than Tobias did, whatever that trade might have been, then they could have given that extra $4 million to Harden. And so that's what really what Harden was waiting for. So it looks like there's no trade to come. Their payroll is going to stay where it is. So they were able to slot Harden in and get him signed. So, McMahon, let me ask you this. Knowing Daryl Morey and James Harden as you do, because you covered them in Houston, do you think this was Daryl going to James and saying, hey, help, let's make a deal here. Help me restock this team from the depth that we lost when we traded for you and help me rebuild your value? Or was this Philly saying, look, James, we're not giving you a max. No matter what, let's do something that makes all of us look good instead of a max, which would make all of us look bad.
I mean, I definitely think it was Daryl and James discussing the situation, and you know, I'll take James at his word at the end of the season when he said he would do what he needed to do to give the Sixers a chance to position themselves to win a championship, because we heard it and then we saw it. Now, I don't know if Daryl's saying, and then we'll rebuild your value, because I don't think James Harden's looking at this as, you know, you heard what he, or you read what he said to Chris Haynes. Yeah, anybody else puts up these numbers near triple double, they're a max player. Everybody's mad at me, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it was about, hey, James, we can rebuild your value. I think it was more, hey, James, you'll get taken care of. Take a step back financially this year, you know, take a $14 million haircut or beard cut this year, and we'll get your we know how much you love PJ Tucker. That's not only one of your favorite teammates, that's one of your best friends. We can get PJ. Hey, you know Daniel House Jr. can play off of you and how that fits. We can get him. You know, Melton is another with Melton and House, suddenly your bench just got a lot more athletic. And you know, I'm sure there's some sort of a understanding that, hey, that player option, you opt out, you'll get your max. I do believe this is a 1 year, $14 million discount, and that he'll get his max after this. But hey, James Harden did what he said he would do, and I was among many who, when he said it, doubted it. He did it, and then they were able to get three pieces who all have significant playoff experience. I think two are proven to be really good fits with Harden. I think Melton is proven to be a good fit playing off of a ball dominant superstar. And I don't think there's any doubt that because Harden was willing to take less, that the Sixers are significantly better than they were at the end of last season.
How much better are they, Buntemps?
It's a really good question. I mean, I think they're definitely better. I mean, to McMahon's point, you know, whenever I talked about the Sixers on the pod, and we talked about them really after the trade until they lost to Miami, what did we keep saying? They have no athleticism. They can't guard anybody on the perimeter. They struggle to rebound, right? Like all these areas, they didn't have much toughness. All these areas they've addressed in a pretty significant way with these signings this offseason. Now, at the same time, Milwaukee made a bet 2 years ago that PJ Tucker couldn't repeat what he did then. Miami would have liked to bring PJ Tucker back. He also had a better year than even I think the Heat could have reasonably expected him to have last season. It's a pretty huge bet by the Sixers to have PJ Tucker on a 3-year deal with a player option on the third year at 40 years old. I have a feeling he's probably going to pick that up.
you think?
If he doesn't, then they're going to be thrilled because he'll be playing out of his mind by then. Still.
I'm curious, how many 40-year-olds have ever had a player option?
Not many.
God.
Not many. It's a short list.
He might be the first. I don't know.
Yeah, he might be. So, you know, I'm very curious to see what PJ Tucker looks like. If he is the guy, if he's anywhere close to what he was last year in particular with Miami, they got a lot better with him and D'Anthony Melton. And we'll see about Daniel House. If he plays like he did in Houston, or in Utah, I should say, last year, where he was really good the second half of the year for the Jazz, That's another big pickup too, but there's some risk with both of those guys. So I think they're better. I think the better question is, are they good enough to truly get out of the East? Well, I still think they're a bit of a step below the other competition at the top of the conference.
And what's the biggest question about whether they're good enough to get out of the East?
Well, Harden can't say I'm still a 22-10-7 guy. That can't be it. He's got to be a dominating player.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. When they made that trade, it was about getting two of the top, fill in the blank, but it's a single digit blank players in the NBA. James Harden can't be, is he a candidate for third team all NBA? No, he has to be. And I'm not saying he's got to, he doesn't have to score 36, but he's got to be an absolutely dominant player. Embiid, if healthy, you can count on him holding up his end of that bargain. He's been MVP runner up the last couple of years. He's that type of player. But if Harden's the 18th, 20th, 22nd best player in the league, that's probably not going to be good enough. And, we can talk, it's been the hamstring, man. Father time with some help in terms of lifestyle is tough to combat. So, but I will believe James Harden is back to being one of the very best players in the NBA when he proves that. Now, I would believe he'd take a discount when he proved that. And we've seen that. But that was a choice. This other stuff is not necessarily – his work ethic can influence it. But, that aging process, man, sometimes you just can't hit it in reverse.
Well, and look, to me, it's not about the numbers, right? Like, James Harden could average 22-10-7 again next year and be an MVP candidate. Like, that's to me not – it's not – he's going to put up numbers no matter what he looks like. The question is, can he get back to the guy he was before he hurt that hamstring in mid-March of 2021 in Brooklyn? Because those first 2 months in Brooklyn, he was a point guard for the Nets. He was setting everybody up. He was playing as well as literally anybody in the NBA and looked awesome. And ever since he hurt that hamstring, he hasn't had the same burst. He has not looked like the same player. And to your point, McMahon, it's a guy that's a borderline third team all-NBA guard. And that is not the guy that the Sixers sat at a press conference in February and trumpeted as the guy who was going to bring them championships to Philadelphia with Joel Embiid. He needs to be a top 10 guy in the league again. Now, if he can do that, to your point, some of this other stuff with PJ Tucker, that stuff sort of falls in the background. Conversely, if James Harden isn't that guy, that stuff falls in the background because it really just comes down to him in the end. And, there's been a lot of talk about, James is committed to working out this summer. James is committed to being in shape this summer, all this kind of stuff. Well, as you said, in May, I was at that press conference at the end of game 6. I asked him that question. He gave the answer that, hey, I'm going to do whatever it takes to win. Some people were like, people weren't sure he'd take less money. He did take less money. Now let's see if he can get himself back in that kind of prime shape. Cause the claim has been, I couldn't get my body right last summer. I was catching up all season long. All the stuff was going on with the trade, new team, et cetera. All those excuses are out the window. He's had a whole offseason to work out. He's healthy. All the indications are he's healthy. Whole offseason to work out. Whole offseason to get ready. Let's see what version of this guy shows up, because there might not be a bigger question in the East, at least, than if James Harden is going to be a top 5-10 player or a top 18-25 player, because that could be the thing that swings a ton of things.
So let's go back 12 months and think about where the Sixers were. Actually, it was a year ago this week that the Bucks won the title. So obviously a little bit off on the calendar, but the Ben Simmons problem was in their face. I don't know if Ben was days away from basically saying he wasn't showing up to camp. Danny Green was, they had re-signed him, but that was like their big offseason move. That wasn't much to improve the roster. Tyrese Maxey was an interesting player coming off a couple of things in his rookie year, but you didn't really know what he was going to become. And Embiid was coming off MVP runner-up. A year later, they've got Simmons off the roster, and now James Harden is making about the same money that Ben Simmons was making. Mm-hmm. I mean, that maneuver just alone, hats off. Now, granted, that maneuver became possible because Harden didn't play great, but That's not a bad maneuver. If you'd have fast forwarded a year ago and said
even,
that they
even
would,
even with Harden not playing great, it's still hard to argue a maneuver from Philly's standpoint.
Pretty remarkable, right?
Yeah.
Maxey, who they guarded in trade talks. Remember, they refused to give him up for Kyle Lowry, and we wondered what that would have led to in the playoffs in 2021. Maxey now looks like he's a foundational piece going forward. Embiid is looking like he's in the middle of his prime. And yeah, they lost a couple of supporting pieces, specifically Seth Curry. They had the unfortunate injury to Danny Green that, you know, was just, you know, I don't even know what Danny would have given him this year. I don't even know if he'd been on the roster, but obviously the injury is terrible luck. But you look at what they've done, they've moved the ball down the field. Daryl Morey has moved the ball down the field. Now, 12 months from now, if he's like got an axe hanging over his head and has to give Harden $200 million and he has another sort of average season, then we have a different discussion. But considering the hand that he was holding a year ago, I think they've done a pretty functional job. And then today, Bontemps, you had another story involving the Sixers in a big moment for them. What was that?
Yeah, so really since David Blitzer and Josh Harris bought the team 10 or 11 years ago, they've been trying to get a new arena. They're not happy being in Wells Fargo Center in Philly. It's sort of a hilarious inside baseball thing. If you get any press releases from the Sixers or if you go to a Sixers game, McMahon, I know you were in Philly last year, so you noticed this. They just say the center on stuff. They don't say Wells Fargo Center because they have all these disputes with the arena on various things. And the biggest thing is they're a tenant in the arena. It's a Flyers arena. It's also an old dumpy arena at this point. It's one of the worst in the league, but they don't have control of it. And so they have announced today that Thursday that they're going to try to build an arena right downtown in Center City in Philly, which, you know, there'd been rumblings about this for a couple of years, and they've had other failed projects fall through over the past couple of years. They tried to build different places, got shot down. And there'd been some rumblings they might try to do this thing in Center City. I didn't really see how they could pull it off. I'm still curious to see if they can pull it off. But, you know, Josh Harris and David Blitzer have a ton of money. They've got sports teams all over the world. To McMahon's point, if they need to pay James Harden a max next summer, they got the ability to pay James Harden a max next summer on top of what they're doing. And, you know, these guys going forward are trying to, you know, re-energize this team. And they, you know, Tad Brown, who was with Daryl Morey and James Harden in Houston, it's not a coincidence to me that he brought up the Chase Center in San Francisco multiple times when I talked to him for this story. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Philly doesn't have the same exact economic base that San Francisco does, but these guys are looking at what the Warriors have. And a lot of teams, I think, in markets like Philly and New York and these places are looking at what the Warriors have and saying, hey, if we have control of our building and we could generate a ton of money, that's going to be a huge win for us. So it's a long way to go. They're not going to be in it for 9 years. Who knows what's going to happen over the next 9 years?
I've never heard of an arena that's being announced. That's 9 years away.
Well, I think Harden will be picking up his $88 million player option for the real 31-32 season.
The real question is Udonis Haslam still be getting a check from the Miami Heat 9 years from now? I think that's probably
the check. Will he still be getting a uniform?
I meant a subsidized by the league check.
So I think the Sixers are moving in a positive direction. The question is it a positive enough to materially change the balance of power in the East? And I just don't know if we have that answer. Do you believe in Harden? I mean, all the other stuff is sort of ancillary.
It's all secondary.
Right?
It's all secondary. How good is James Harden? Tell me that answer. I'll tell you how good the Sixers are.
They have positioned themselves to where if James Harden is some version of Houston, or like you said, even early
the Brooklyn
Brooklyn
one.
James Harden.
Right. Can he be Brooklyn James Harden before he got hurt?
And if he can be and Embiid is healthy, they're absolutely a championship contender. If he's the guy who we saw huffing and puffing and, you know, trying to avoid the ball in the playoff series against the Heat, then that's probably about as far as they go.
Well, it also depends on what happens with Maxey and whether Maxey
takes another jump.
Well, yeah. I mean, is Maxey headed towards being a max player after this year? I mean, Maxey is going to be highly motivated to have a big year. And what is his role next to Maxey? So, I mean, you know, that's another thing I'm going to be watching. I don't know what Maxey's ceiling is. He's a really good player. I don't know if he's a star.
Again, if you're rolling out in the playoffs with James Harden and Tyrese Maxey as your starting backcourt, that's got some issues at the other end too. Like that's not,
well, what's one of the reasons why they went all out to
stalwart.
It's one of the reasons why they went all out to get Tucker so he could handle some of the big wings in theory.
Yes. Right. And House. And then, right. DeAnthony Melton can, you know, he's a good defensive guard. I'm not saying he's, you know, Gary Payton, the first or second, but he's a good defensive guard.
Right.
I tell you what though, man, Maxey is your number three option with the arrow pointing up, I think is pretty encouraging. I'm looking at his numbers from last year, you know, 17.5 points per game, basically 49, 43, 87 shooting splits. That's pretty impressive stuff for a guy who is, was what, 21 years old.
And so often, it's obviously not an ironclad rule. There's a hundred different, you know, guys you could point to where this isn't always the case. But so often in the NBA, your third year defines who you are as going to player. Okay, we knew in Luka's first year is pretty good. We knew in, right. You know, LeBron's first year is pretty good. We knew in, you know, in Anthony Bennett's first year, that was might be troublesome. You know, sometimes some things are more clear cut, but we often see guys hit to the turbo in year three, which is one of the reasons why year three is the you know, the defining year for a lot of guys in their careers and whether how they're going to get paid. But that's good. That's going to be a question for Maxey. All right, before we move on, McMahon, it's trivia time.
Uh-oh.
Brought to you by CarMax online or on the lot with home delivery in select markets. That means center stage comes Timothy Bontemps.
I have a Donovan Mitchell trivia question again. I know we did one a couple weeks ago with McMahon. Might have been last week. I don't remember. Might have been on the pod that disappeared. But I thought we might talk about him at some point. So I had one ready. Donovan Mitchell has averaged 20 points in each of his first five seasons.
Ooh.
Who is the last guard to do that?
Last guard averaged 20 in each of his first five seasons. That's a tough one. Guard. Still active, I assume.
That was a troll yes. for a hint.
Yes.
He's giving still us active? A stone face.
Stone, not, not.
Why would I give you any hints?
I'm so bad. Trip. That sounds like a yes.
Don't tell me it's. And it's going to. Is it Kyrie?
It's not Kyrie.
Really, McMahon, this is about who would have averaged 20 points in his first year.
It is not right. an active player.
It's not Jordan, is it?
Iverson. Not Jordan. It's Allen Iverson. Ah, I threw you off a little bit by saying Donovan Mitchell. It was a Sixers related question. If I'd said it was Sixers related, you would have had it. Allen Iverson, first guy since Allen Iverson.
You got to think about who, because not that many guys average 20 as a rookie.
Hard to score 20 as a rookie.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier today than it was when Iverson did it because the game was played much slower back then.
Also, the last time the Sixers made the conference finals, 2001. Can they do it again?
You like to think that they could, but I'm not betting on it.
Hey, man, you got to go through the best player on the planet, and then you got to go through the Celtics at minimum. That's not easy.
Yeah, and, you know, we still don't even know where the balance of power is in the East. We got, you know, one of the best players in the league is obviously on the trade block. I mean.
Well, even if they're healthy, to me, the Nets, the Celtics and Bucks right now are clearly one and two. And then there's a close group after that with Brooklyn and Philly and Miami. But, like, those teams Toronto could be interesting too, but those teams all have real questions. Like,
hey, also those Knicks. And I'm just saying that open that if we kiss their butt enough, they might actually take questions from the media at some point.
Yeah. Well, someday somebody will have to answer questions. I will guarantee you with that.
It won't be Leon Rose.
Well, somebody's gonna have to answer questions from somebody. So we'll see how it goes. You know, the thing about pro sports, and this is cruel at times, but your results are plainly on the page. Mm-hmm. You can debate in other professions. In this profession, your results are on the page. So now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. I wanted to talk a little bit about probably one of the more interesting stories for me of the last year. And I don't know if it was purposely done in news dump fashion, but it came out late last Friday night. And the NBA is, you know, summer league is wrapped. Football season is starting. We're in full swing vacation season. So I just don't know if it has gotten quite the reaction that I think it should. But Thad Fauché's statement to Adrian Wojnarowski about his breakup with Russell Westbrook was remarkable. The only time I can remember, and it's not a complete record, my memory is flawed, you guys can step in, but the only time I remember an agent publicly like putting out a statement when he was separating with the player, where the agent spoke first. Maybe there were times where there was a split and then the agent would maybe give a quote if it was a high profile split, but where the agent like came out in a statement fashion was back in 2004 when SFX, which was a powerhouse agency at the time run by Arne Tellem, fired Carlos Boozer as a client when Boozer had sort of a wink-wink deal with the Cavs that, you know, it depends on who you believe. I think both sides were guilty to a certain extent. I'm not going to rip open an old wound there in my life, but where Boozer left.
Was anything said when Marcus Morris went from the, I think it was the Spurs, the Knicks a couple of years ago? That was sort of a similar situation. Too.
Yes, but nowhere near as high profile. So in the Boozer right. case, I don't want to get into too big of details. The Cavs thought he was coming back on a contract, but it was against the rules to have him agree to it. And then free agency opened and he was like, oh, actually, I'm going to the Jazz. And it was for $25 million or something, $28 million more than the Cavs could pay. The rules were different at the time. They didn't have full bird rights. And the agency put out a statement saying, we're done with Carlos Boozer, which was stunning because Boozer was about to sign a $70 million deal that they were going to collect a commission on. And also you could argue that it was great agenting that they were able to get him out of his Cavs deal. His agent, just as long as we complete the history lesson, his agent, Boozer's agent, was a young agent up and coming named Rob Pelinka. Mm-hmm. Pelinka ended up leaving that agency as a result of this and took Kobe Bryant with him. The rest is largely history. But my point is, it's been, in my view, 18 years since I've seen something like this. Thad Fauché, not only splitting with a player of 14 years, it's a little bit rare for a star player of Westbrook's caliber to have the same agent for this long. It does happen. So him leaving Thad was surprising, but agents and players change literally almost weekly in the NBA. And even star players change their agents with some frequency. I mean, how many different agents has Kevin Durant had? He's had, I think, four or five agents. And nobody
and
would say
that. Partner.
Right. No one would say. And by the way, Rob Pelinka was Durant's agent for about 15 minutes at one point. So nobody would say that it's shocking. But the statement that he made, and in the statement, he says that he has advised Russell to take the offer that Darvin Ham has made him, which is a starting role where he is in the starting lineup, but he is a role player.
Right.
He is not going to be the centerpiece of the offense. They are not going to run the offense through him. He is advising him not to seek a trade for a fourth consecutive offseason. And then he says they have irreconcilable differences in their splitting. He never said that Westbrook wants a trade. He never said that Westbrook doesn't want to be on the Lakers. But he did say...
You can read between the lines.
Yes, he did say, I think he should take what's on the table right now, and we have irreconcilable differences.
Well, so, and basically, listen, what you're having here is a guy who's been Russ's agent for 14 years saying, I can't reason with him. So how are the Lakers going to?
Right. And think about, first off, hundreds of millions of dollars that Thad negotiated for Russ and millions of dollars that Thad himself made mm-hmm. off of Russ. This is a very lucrative partnership. And of course, Russell Westbrook isn't, this will be his last $40 million year, but we see this all the time. Just because, you know, if you have a longstanding agent, just because the money is drying up doesn't mean the agent's going to care about you less. I don't think Thad Fauché, that his reputation is not to abandon guys. I think he truly, he's a longtime veteran agent. I don't know how long he's been around, over 25 years, probably. Bontemps, and by the way, Russ is looking for another agent. I mean, I'm not going to say who I've heard he's going to hire, but like, he's not going to represent himself. He's looking at other big name agents. So Bontemps, here's my question. What is Russ's new agent, assuming he hires one, going to be tasked to do that Thad Fauché wouldn't?
Well, yeah. I mean, to me, I'm less concerned about Thad and Russ, because like you said, this happens all the time. I think the thing that's interesting to me is
not on blast.
Well, that's fine. I don't even
not with a multi-paragraph.
But even still, set that aside, because that's not really what's important. What's important is what you asked at the end. What's next for Russell Westbrook?
Right.
I think you can make a good case. If Russell Westbrook is not on the Lakers at the start of this season, I think you make a good argument he's never going to play in the NBA again. Because I think if you look around, well, I see McMahon making faces, but if you look around, where is Russell Westbrook going to go that somebody wants him to be around? Because to this point in his career, it's always been Russ running the show, right? Mm-hmm. It's the Russ show. We saw that in Houston. He's with James Harden. They have to remake the team to make it work around Russ. He's in Washington. They have to remake the team to work around Bradley Beal. Obviously, that was always the case in OKC when he was a superstar player. But now we saw what happened last year with the Lakers. We on the pod all agreed the second that trade was made, it was a disastrous fit. Certainly yeah. played out that way. And so you look at that situation now. Yeah, Russell Westbrook, sure. He could maybe be a role player on the Lakers. That would go against everything Russell Westbrook has ever said in his career and acted in his career, where it's always been, I've turned myself into a superstar player. I was a recruit nobody heard of. I, through sheer force of will and talent, turned myself into a first ballot Hall of Fame player. I don't need to listen to anybody else. I'm going to do, you know, this is the whole thing. Now I do what
that?
I want.
Can I make a quick comment about that?
Yep.
He went to UCLA, was the fourth pick. That's not an underdog.
When he went to UCLA.
John Morant went to Murray State. That, sir, is an underdog.
Well, right, but he went to UCLA as an under-the-radar recruit. Like, it's not like he had a choice between UCLA, Kentucky, and Duke, and, you know.
Okay.
He was not expected to be a lottery pick when he went to UCLA. He was a
fair.
He was fair. An interesting recruiting prospect that wasn't seen as a future NBA star. That within it's just
sometimes it's like it reminds me of like when LeBron won the title in Cleveland, and granted he's in the throes of the moment, and he says to Doris Burke, "I don't know why the man upstairs had to make everything so hard for me."
Well,
I'm like,
I would not. Okay, you know, I would
say
not
like everybody has their struggle, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like, I just want to go crazy on the struggle of going to UCLA and being the fourth.
Sure, he was like a 3 or 4 star recruit, and he was a stunning pick at the fourth pick. So I, again, it's not the same as LeBron saying, why is it, why has life been so hard for me?
It has to do with more. Everybody thinks they've got to struggle is my point. Okay. This man was not an underdog. He's one of the greatest athletes the world has ever seen.
The point is Westbrook through his whole time in basketball has always been wired to do things his way and not anybody else's way. Much like Allen Iverson, as I've said a bunch of times on the pod, he reminds me a ton of Allen Iverson. What happened at the end when Allen Iverson started to go off the cliff? He went off the cliff in a minute and was gone out the door.
Yep.
And again, look around the league. Let's say Russ gets a buyout or gets traded somewhere. Let's say he gets traded. Gets traded some rebuilding team. That's, you know, part of a salary dump and the Lakers get players back. Even if the Kyrie trade happens, like he's not going to be on the Nets. So, all right, Russ is bought out. He's a free agent. Who wants to deal with Russell Westbrook right now? Who wants to deal with a high volume, high turnover, no defense, backup guard? Who's going to be a problem to deal with?
I hear everything you're saying, and I agree with it. The only reason I kind of was like, I was having dinner before a game last year. So we're, you know, sitting in the media room, and it's me and like, I think it was like four or five scouts. And I asked basically that question, like, hey, mm-hmm. you know, if Russ got bought out, like, would there even be any interest in him? And two scouts from two different teams shot their hands and we'd be interested. Now, obviously at a drastically reduced price. So that's the only reason I hesitate to say to fully agree with you. Now, I'm not going to say the teams, but both of those teams have since added guys who they probably consider the point guards of their future. But, you know, I just to say he would be out of the NBA, I think there would be somebody who would be interested in selling tickets. And I still think that people will pay money to go watch Russ play.
Well, when Bontemps says the word never, I don't agree with the word never. But I think, Bontemps, your statement is reasonable because this, I think, is probably the point that Thad Fauché is making. Without putting words into his mouth, he said in the statement, I think if he gets traded, there's a decent chance he'll be bought out. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he should do that. And he's not saying because he doesn't want to deal with the negotiations or, you know, Thad Fauché probably has a pretty good idea of what the marketplace might be. Well, I would step back from saying never, though. I would not say that.
I mean, listen, it's a fair point by McMahon. And that's why I said I think you could see it. Because, look, if you're making the minimum, you could see somebody take a chance on a flyer, see how it goes. You know, Allen did have a couple cups of coffee. You know, he came back to Philly for a brief minute. He was in Memphis for a second. Like,
literally for a second.
For three games.
I don't think he played a game.
Three barbecue lunches. No, he did not play a game in Memphis.
He didn't play a game. So maybe a situation like that happens. But look, Carmelo Anthony spent a year and a half, basically, in the wilderness before he got another chance, right? Mm-hmm. And you could say a lot of things about Carmelo, but he's a bigger player. He's a better shooter. He's a much better fit as a role player. And he always was a more malleable guy in terms of, like, you know, being in the locker room, dealing with the media, all that kind of stuff mm-hmm. than Russ, who is not easy to deal with. So, you know, like, the only way you can have Russ on the court and have any chance of being successful is if you have the ball in his hands whenever he's out there. I just don't think there's many teams that are going to say, we want to have Russ out here with the ball. And if you do that, say you bring him in and have him play 12, 13 minutes, backup, there's a backup guard off the bench, give you a little bit of pop offense, right? Is Russell Westbrook going to actually accept doing that?
I was talking to somebody who was with the Lakers last season, and they were saying that if there's a person in the organization that Russ could listen to, they tried to talk to him.
Yeah.
Everybody. So I don't want to say specifically point any and say for sure anything happened, but Well, it was said to me that everybody, you know, and just to point out, Carmelo was on the Lakers last year. I don't know whether sure what was said, but.
Well, you could see Carmelo in media interviews would sort of, he wouldn't quite say it, but he would sort of allude to his situation and be like, I had to adjust my game. I had to readjust my expectations. I had to have a new perspective. Like, he was sort of saying it without saying it.
So from what I'm told, like, just about everybody there who Russ would allow an audience for, I'm not saying that Austin Reeves was coming up and putting his arm around him and going, hey, Russ.
Hey, man, when I was growing up in Arkansas.
I think if the conversation started out as Mr. Westbrook, I'm not sure that that's how it would, that's the ideal candidate. So that all happened. And Darvin Ham came in, and like, if it wasn't his first order of business, it was in the top three. He began reasoning with Russ. And not only was he reasoning with Russ privately in ways he has made public, but he has been incredibly supportive of him publicly. Like, I can't
imagine. To the point of being mocked. I mean, let's be honest, which is fine. I think sometimes coaches have to be willing to be mocked to get their point across. And
for sure, especially if you're not Pat Riley. Or somebody with Phil Jackson, you know.
But what has Darvin Ham been saying? He's been saying things like, this guy has to play defense. He has to get back
to playing championship defense.
Yeah, like he's been saying stuff that like, yes, if Russ wants to have a role in the NBA, this is the kind of stuff he needs to try to do again.
My point is that they have bent over backwards. Even the brand new coach is bending over backwards here. And we still have what looks like this, you know, coming tension. So like if you'd asked me before this Thad Fauché breakup, if you'd asked me a week ago, what is going to be the pinch point with Russell Westbrook this year? I would have said 10 days into the regular season when this idea, you know, after the preseason where they looked at it and the regular season, and there was like six games where it was clear Westbrook was only playing 25 minutes, only getting seven shots, and, you know, being told to stand in the corner on, you know, 2/3 of the play calls that were happening. That was where I thought the pinch point was going to be. But I was willing to allow for the possibility, you know, because there was, if you pulled the weeds back, you could find a little gem in there. And he did shoot 45% on corner threes and, you know,
on half an attempt a game.
I was going to say, I think it was 4 of 9.
I know, but it's like, I didn't want to slam and bolt the door that it was impossible that this could possibly work. I thought it was highly unlikely, but I wanted to allow for
McMahon and I slammed and bolted the door.
I'm not going to do that, but I thought probably within the first few weeks of the season that this would go off the rails. Now it looks like it might go off the rails soon. Actually, you could even argue that it might even behoove the Lakers if it goes off the rails now, because that way you don't quote unquote waste time in training camp.
Well, here's the question. Are the Lakers better off just telling if they can't get a trade? Let's say the Nets, I mean, I think we all agree right now, the Nets situation is going to be status quo for a while, right? We all agree. No KD trade, no Kyrie trade. Are the Lakers better off saying, hey, Russ, just stay at home, stay away from the team?
Direct deposit is going to work.
What's that?
Your direct deposit will still work.
Your direct deposit is going to work. You're going to get paid, and we're going to wait and see how things go. And if we can make a deal down the road to move you somewhere, we will. Otherwise, we're going to wait and see what happens. Are the Lakers better off with him at home or in uniform?
Well, they're better off with him at home if he's not going to try to play the role that Darvin Ham is saying is what's available to him.
As I just said, are they better off with him at home or in uniform?
Yeah, basically, are they better off asking Russ to chill or asking him to be Bruce Brown? Because
I think you can argue they're better off with him at home because he's not going to be Bruce Brown.
I completely agree with what you're saying. And, you know, the fact that him and LeBron sat in opposite corners at the summer league and made not even eye contact. I mean, woof. If that's, yeah. And understanding that every eye, you know, every camera, every eye in the building was on them. Like if you're not even willing to pretend to be somewhat cordial, Good luck training camp.
Let me speak to that as the season goes. That same night, Leon Rose and Wes Wesley, Leon Rose, the president of the Knicks, Wes, mm-hmm. I can't remember what Wes's title is, vice president.
High ranking Knicks executive, former CAA grand pooba.
Knicks recruiter, William Wesley.
Came over to LeBron. I believe Dave McMenamin captured the video. If it wasn't Dave, I'm sorry. And Leon was LeBron's agent for years. Mm-hmm. Wes was one of his closer friends slash advisors for years, but they had a very, very permanent break in about 2012, 10 years ago. And they really don't communicate at all. Rich Paul was with CAA with Leon Rose. He left Leon Rose, took clients with him, started Clutch Sports. There is scar tissue. There is beaucoup scar tissue there. But when they came over at the arena, LeBron, you know, he's had good experience with them in the past. They had a moment. Now, they did not go out to dinner afterwards, I'll tell you that. And I don't foresee any dinners in the short-term future. I can't predict what will happen in 10 years, but I don't think they're friends. I don't think they're going to be friends. I don't think they have been friendly. But in the moment, LeBron said, hello, how you doing? Good luck to you. How's your family? Great. Take care. See you later. And that didn't happen even with his teammate.
Okay, but you're talking about scar tissue versus blood still spilling.
That's my point. My point is on a night when LeBron was in a good mood and taking audience with even folks he's had bad blood with, it wasn't even a moment with Westbrook, and
they approached him, right? And so
I wasn't there. I was basically, I think that's true, but I was.
My understanding is LeBron was sitting in his little baseline seat and was kind of, you know, sitting on the throne and people would come over.
Everybody did come over. Yes. Kurt Rambis, Rob Pelinka, they all came over.
Right. And so Russ ain't approaching the throne, right? You see what I'm saying? So we can talk. And that's the thing about it gets right back to Russ as this defense first, you know, dirty work, move the ball, role player. That's not who Russell Westbrook is. That's not who he wants to be. That's not who he considers himself to be. Whether realistically that's the only way he can continue to extend his career and be relevant in the NBA or not.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Well, real quick, before we go.
He is MVP Russell Westbrook and always will be in his mind.
Before we go, is there a team, you know, I have asked this question to some executives out there. Is there a team out there? Let's forget about the circumstances of how he would become a free agent, whether he would be traded and cut or get a buyout from the Lakers or whatever. I've asked some executives, where could he possibly fit? And I've only gotten a couple of lukewarm answers. And I'm not defending these answers, you can knock them right down. And I'm not going to push back. One of them I was told was Dallas.
Like on the roster?
They lost Brunson, you know. Like I said, knock it down, buddy. I'm not saying there's an answer.
I So you guys told me that you'd heard that, and I checked in. I got a very quick hell no.
Okay.
And here's the thing. Like, could I see the logic of if the Lakers were willing to come off of a pick or both the picks?
No. I'm not talking about a trade. I'm talking about he's a free agent.
Oh, no. No.
All right. You're talking about taking a swing on it to get out of some long-term money, and then if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
I'm talking about where is there a team where they could say we need Russell Westbrook?
I know. McMahon's point was if they could take Russ's expiring contract, get a pick, and get out of some money, maybe they take a swing on it. Sure, but that's not what you're describing, Brian.
And so even then, I was told hell no. The idea of Russ being on the roster next to the most ball dominant player in the NBA, Luka Doncic, and also remember Mark Cuban. Back when it was Russ and KD there last year, remember when he created all those waves by saying Russell Westbrook is not a superstar?
Oh, I remember.
Well, he's not now. The other team that was floated to me as, you know, not that they would have interest, just to be 100% clear for aggregation purposes. This is just like, where could we possibly see him fitting? Was maybe Minnesota.
I don't like that fit either.
I mean, I don't.
Contemps, I don't like any of these fits.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they're anywhere. I don't think he fits anywhere.
Yes,
frankly.
You've been clear. Yeah. You think he might never play in the league again. I mean,
let the Ant-Man cook.
Well, let the Ant-Man that's cook. True. The Ant-Man, Cat needs the ball in his hands. You know,
D'Angelo.
Russell, I would assume.
We're talking about backup roles here. We're talking about backup roles here.
But the problem with Russ is a backup, man. God, this is not the point.
That was the thing we had with Iverson. Iverson refused the concept.
This ain't Vince Carter who's going to kind of, you know, gracefully accept being
this is definitely not a reserve.
No, I mean, and look, and Russ has got a lot of this. I mean, I don't know if anybody has the same cultural cachet as Allen, but he's very similar in everything about him, from his approach on the court to his cachet within the NBA fan base to sort of the iconic nature with which he carries himself, all that stuff. And it's just hard to look at him and not see it end in the exact same way.
So typically,
what's the nickname of the team in Beijing?
The Ducks.
I think Beijing Ducks could use them.
So the thing about it is, when you see a veteran like this, you know, not even like this, but sometimes when you see a veteran get released, you say, well, where are his long-term connections? What's his network? Because sometimes you see, oh yeah, he's going back to his old coach. He's going back to his old team. He's going back to his old GM. But Westbrook has been a journeyman.
Well, his long-term connections are Oklahoma City, and
happening now.
Yeah, he's the complete antithesis of the direction
that
they're going, and they it looks like their rebuilding project is really progressing well.
Right. I mean, they would love to have him attend games. They would honor him, but they're not having him on their team right now.
Yeah,
I was at Russell Westbrook's Alexander. I was at Russell Westbrook's ceremony to announce his signing of a Supermax extension in 2017, 5 years ago.
This is the contract that's
if he gets traded this offseason, he will literally have been on a different team each year he was on the Supermax contract. That is a remarkable thing.
And then you talk about like connections, like unfortunately for Russ, there's a lot of burned bridges. There's not connections. Like that's obviously the KD thing went down in flames, you know, the partnership with Harden, like they might still be buddies, but like, as far as being teammates, that was a 1 year thing. And both of them couldn't wait to get the hell out of Dodge.
So I'm saying, where's the lifeboat?
No part of them, the Wizards. I mean, like just, there's not one.
Where's
just
the
don't
lifeboat?
See it.
Yeah. You think Billy Donovan's hoping to sign up again for more Russ? I mean, come on.
In all seriousness, if a team like the Kings didn't have De'Aaron Fox and the Kings, who just want to win 40 games, like maybe I could see the Kings, who are just desperate to get in the playoffs or get in the play-in tournament. Because if you put Russ on that team and you give him the ball all the time, he could put up numbers and maybe get you to 35 wins or so, like he did in Washington the year before. Mm-hmm. But like, there's just very, especially, and that's the thing about Russ, like this year, you have all these teams, they're trying to be god-awful to get either Victor Wembanyama or Scoot Anderson in the draft. So like, there's very few teams that are like, hey, we're trying to get to the eighth seed. And that's sort of like, you need to find a spot where he's going to play a lot of minutes and have the ball, and a team's trying to win 40 games. There's just not very many of those at this point.
And the Knicks had always kind of been mentioned in the Russ conversation. Well, they just paid Brunson $104 million.
Right, they want to trade for Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, so like that makes zero sense at this point.
Yep.
Hey, maybe the Lakers can trade him for KD.
it's just, I mean, this is a thing like this. It's dry. It's a dry field right now. So, all right, we'll see how that happens. It's going to be interesting to see what Russ's move is. I mean, maybe he doesn't make a move. Maybe he hires an agent and then just comes to camp and tries to make it work. But the statement implied that that's not what his intention was. So we'll see. I'd like to know what agent's going to come in there and, you know, present him a strategy that maybe they know that Thad Fauché doesn't, or that, you know, that the Lakers don't, or that we don't.
Well, let me ask you this. Out there that works. Are the Lakers, should they be willing to part with a pick to get off of Russ?
Only if it improves their roster a lot. You're not just going to, I mean, ultimately at the end of the day, if it's a bad deal and it's got 1 year left on it, you just eat it. Mm-hmm. But if you can make your team a serious contender, I mean, that's the real thing that Jeannie Buss has to grapple with. I don't think that Jeannie Buss is against improving her team this year, but if she's going to give up first round picks that are going to hamper the Lakers into the future, she's got to believe that the trade gives them a chance this year to compete for the whole thing. And, you know, she apparently hasn't gotten there yet. Whatever
is Buddy Hield good enough for something like that?
No,
I don't think so.
Hard no. I mean, and Buddy Hield's fine. I mean, they should have traded for Buddy Hield last summer instead of Russell Westbrook, which is a whole other conversation. Another Rob Pelinka former client, but when you look at the Lakers, Brian hit it on the head. If I'm trading picks, if I'm the Lakers, I'm only doing that if it makes me a legitimate championship contending team. For all of Kyrie's issues, if they turn Russ into Kyrie, then give up the picks to me, because that gives you a chance to win a championship that they otherwise don't have. All these other moves, whether it's, you know, obviously if they could do Buddy Hield for like Kendrick Nunn and Talen Horton-Tucker, and they don't have to give up picks, like, okay, that's one thing. But like, if you're giving up first round picks for role players on this team, that is, I think we all agree, pretty strongly in the mix to make it out of the play-in tournament, not to make it to the conference finals. Buddy Hield's not changing your trajectory with that.
But would LeBron make eye contact with Buddy Hield if he saw him at Summer League?
Well, that's the thing. Like, the other thing is, and Bontemps has been talking about this, is that the Lakers, especially if LeBron doesn't extend his contract, which if he doesn't extend it, it doesn't necessarily mean he's walking, because it could be part of a strategy. But when Russ comes off the books, and if LeBron comes off the books, they're going to have $60 or $70 million in cap space. Mm-hmm. And they will have their pick next year. Not that that pick is potentially going to be incredible.
It might be number 8 overall.
But,
well, and by the way, who's going to be a free agent next summer? Kyrie Irving. Like, if they're interested in signing, if trading for the guy, in theory, they could sign him and not give up a pick next spring.
Right. I'm just saying, like, they could use the pick on draft night next year. I mean,
sure.
The hand that they're holding to improve their roster next year is actually going to be pretty good. The problem with that is you got to tell that to 37-year-old LeBron. And, well, LeBron and has a contract situation. So
what's in it for LeBron to extend now?
As I was saying, like, there's this extension thing coming in August, September. I mean, it doesn't have to happen in August. I mean, it could happen June 25th, 2023. He can extend all the way into next year. I don't, you know, LeBron doesn't need the financial security.
No.
So,
well,
I mean,
could we see LeBron do what James Harden did?
Exactly. Or Chris Paul, although right? the Suns didn't exactly immediately spend the money the way the Sixers did. But, you know, that wouldn't, so like, that is a viable strategy for the Lakers to save their powder, keep their powder dry for next year.
Sure.
But that's just a hard strategy to sell to a 37-year-old LeBron. But it could be, it's like the thing with the Nets, like the Nets trying to make it work with Kyrie and Durant again, I don't think will work. Because I think that that's proven that it's not going to work. But out of the options that they have at the moment, I can see why that's the
only good option they have right now.
That could be the same thing with the Lakers. The only good option that they have, the best of their options, is to save it.
Mm-hmm. So why that Westbrook trade was just so completely disastrous. It was so bad to give up three or four rotation players and a first to make that trade. It's just a devastating trade for them.
How many teams have made devastating Russ trades now? That's at least two.
Yeah.
Well, all right. I will talk to you guys later. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Bontemps and Mr. McMahon. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our producers. Hope your summers are going well. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.